Hello and welcome to
2 o'clock with Keller.
Bring your tea
and leave with more.
Hi.
Hello, welcome back. Another episode.
Woo.
Woo. I every single time I never know how to start these things. It's like we go from talking, then we just kind of stop and we're like, oh wait, how do we start this?
Yeah, it's just like we've been interrupted in our conversation and we're like, excuse me.
But it's okay. Yeah, we're back. It's a lovely sunny evening as we're recording this.
It is. I'm roasting. I'm still roasting and I'm drinking tea.
Surely that'll just help, you know, level your body in the outside.
Yeah, you're right, actually. Yeah. You know, sometimes you just gasp for a cuppa and it doesn't really matter if it's hot or not. I'm like, oh, get in me.
Definitely. And it's very on brand for 2 o'clock with Keller, having a cup of tea with you.
So. Do you know what? I've never really thought about it, but most of the time that we're calling, we do have a cup of tea.
Yeah, we do. We do. We've got to have a good cup of tea with a chin wag. I say that without a cup of tea, but okay.
How dare you?
I'm sorry. I'll edit that bit out.
Today, we're carrying on with the literariness of the last episode, but we're mixing it up between books. And we're doing films because obviously we love a film. Our other main thing to chat about. Last one was really fun chatting about a few different books. So we're going to chat about a few different books and films via the form of beginnings and endings.
Yeah, which is quite exciting because I think occasionally you hear people talk about like first lines or last lines, but I think beginnings and endings is a bit more. Bit more open, and it's nice to apply it to films as well.
Yeah, but I don't even know how you came up with the idea for this episode.
I think we were just chatting during one of our filming episodes last series.
Yeah,
I can't remember what episode it was or what it was, but I think it just came to us.
The only thing I can remember is talking about Manhattan, which you can listen to on series three. And I said that I loved the opening so much. And I was like, it's weird because normally I don't like the opening of anything.
Yeah.
Like the beginning of most books and films, it takes me ages to get into them. Mm. But instantly I was like, wow, this is so beautiful.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess it must have come off of that. But I think it's a cool thing to discuss because normally we just go properly into everything in one book or film. All the good chunky middle stuff. So now we're just doing a little sneaky preview, little beginning, cheeky ending.
Cheeky ending, so.
Yeah, I like that. Do you know, this makes me want to do a whole project or dissertation or something, all about endings or beginnings, or both.
Because the thing is, you could do one on beginnings and one on endings.
Yeah, it is so good. I just find it so intriguing. So I love this episode for us already.
Yeah.
Actually, I just even thought of another one I want to talk about. Let me just note that down.
Yeah, we will.
This
we
is
will
so up our street.
Honourable mentions as well. Of just
This is so fun. I love this for us.
Let's go.
Yeah, okay. Before we get ahead of ourselves, Ella, hit me.
What have you been consuming this week?
Oh, I meant you hit me off me.
Oh, me hit you. Okay, I'll hit you. I have been consuming. What have I been consuming? I watched a film called Palm Springs on Amazon. I don't think I've mentioned this to you yet.
No.
And it's kind of like a Groundhog Day time loop premise, but they're at a wedding in Palm Springs. And it was just a really fun, entertaining film that was quite funny in places, but it was also quite sweet because it's kind of a bit of a rom-com-esque thing as well. And I just really enjoyed it. It was just exactly what I needed the other night. I just wanted to watch something new, but fun, but not like completely trashy.
Yeah.
But not something that would like tear my heart out kind of thing.
No.
It just seemed to tick all the boxes. And it was quite, and it kind of had a slightly different twist on the kind of time loop thing, where it kind of had an explanation to how it worked.
Okay.
And then how it gets resolved, or does it get resolved? But you know how some of them are very much like they don't explain. They don't,
yeah, it just happens and it's back to normal. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, this, the way they set this out is as if it could be realistic and you could, it could kind of be feasible in a way. Yeah. I don't know, it's just really fun. So I'd recommend that if you fancy something fun.
Yeah, the trailer does look funny.
Yeah, yeah. It is good. I did enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, that's a nice one.
That's that.
Yeah. Cute.
So now you can hit me.
Okay. I thought this week I would talk about the guest. No, oh God, not the guest list. I think I already spoke about that one.
I've just begun reading the guest list.
Yes! Get in there. I'm so excited.
The library.
Yeah.
About a third of the way through. Top notch.
Yes, that makes me so happy. Okay, so I'm reading The Hunting Party. I'm 3/4 of the way through it. Mm-hmm. And I probably will finish it tomorrow. And it's by Lucy Foley, who also wrote The Guest List, which is why I went to say that. And I actually hadn't heard of this book before, but because I read The Guest List and loved it, I was like, yeah, we've got to read this one too. But oh my God, I don't know if I like it. I think at the moment I'm feeling 3 stars, mainly because it's the exact same formula as The Guest List. The first time around I was like, oh, I love it, and now I'm like, I feel like I'm reading the same book and they just switched out the names, which it might be a bit unfair because that's what's expected of the genre in terms of like Agatha Christie. It is all similar vibes, like all these people go to one place, like they're locked in a room together, it's a mystery, you know. But it's even down to the style of, in both books she has dual timelines and you know someone's died and you don't know which one of them it is, and then there's the whole current, there's somebody that works at the place in the present working out how it happened or like who it is, and then in the, then a few days before that, then it has another timeline of like talking through each person's perspectives leading up to it and all their secrets. And I don't know, I think this feels like a dry run for The Guest List. And I'm just not that bothered. I'm not as into them. And also the characters are all these privileged people. Not again. But in The Guesses, I just think it's so much more, like, I feel like there's so many commentaries in there that's really intriguing. Aside from the actual crime, like the crime isn't as important in a way, but I feel like it is in this. I just feel like The Guest List is next level, so I don't really see the point of reading The Hunting Party. But who knows, maybe I'll be shook by the end, but I'm not as intrigued, like, needing to know what happened.
That's fair. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Because, like you say, there is a kind of formula to these sort of things, but I think it can get to the point where it's hard to read lots of them because the formula is exactly the same.
Yeah.
Even it's just though that's part of the genre.
It just really does not feel different enough.
Mm.
Is, I don't know. I'd be intrigued to read reviews of them side by side. Yeah. But I think even if I had read The Hunting Party first, I wouldn't like it as much because I just think I'm less invested in characters. They're not as developed. So maybe not recommending that one, but definitely Guest List. So we will have a back chat about that.
Definitely. Soon. Definitely, for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. Shall we just dive straight in?
Yeah.
There you go, it's a little diving action. We're going to dive straight into our first beginning. Should we start with books or films?
Books.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to go ahead with your first book beginning?
Yeah, I will. Oh, this is so fun. Okay, I chose 1984 by George Orwell for my book beginning because it just came instantly to mind. I think I've spoken before on the podcast about how much I love this book. and how much I love the opening line. It stays with me. So good. And my poppy, you can't really see in this light, but it's all out of shape. Literally just like the first couple of pages, I think. I don't know why. It's literally just, yeah. But I'll just read the first little paragraph and then explain. Okay. It was a bright, cold day in April and the clocks were striking 13. Winston Smith, his chin nuzzled into his breast in an effort to escape the vile wind, slipped quickly through the glass doors of Victory Mansions, though not quickly enough to prevent a swirl of gritty dust from entering along with him.
Ooh, drama! Love it, love it.
Yeah. I really love the opening because it's so consonant. Yeah. And I wanted to read it aloud because I just think it sounds really good.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. And because obviously this is a whole dystopian book, I really like that it begins with clock striking 13, with that being kind of impossible.
Yeah, it sets that up straight away for you.
Yeah. And it's like that Once Upon a Time vibe, but subverted, which is pretty cool. So I really love that stays in my mind so much, and that in the first couple of lines you just meet Winston Smith. You don't really know anything about him other than that he's tucked into himself going into this horrible building, and that's pretty much the plot of the book. Like him just not living his best life, going into horrible buildings, coming out traumatized. So I think that just sets the scene so well. And instantly I want to know, why is Winston going into this horrible grey building? What is he hiding from? Why is he going into a building also when the clocks are striking 13?
Yeah, like what's the significance of that in that moment? Is it just a coincidence?
Yeah, and it's just, I think, talking about time, like, I mean, obviously, like, most books, like, they do talk about time, it's just inevitable, isn't it? But explicitly mentioning the time, I always find that such a powerful tool, because then you feel the pressure, you instantly feel like you're being watched. We're watching him going into a building, we're hearing the clock counting down, maybe, to something. And I just remember reading the first couple of lines, being like, oh my god, what is going to happen? And also the fact that he's going into Victory Mansion, and you think, oh, mansion, that sounds really posh, like that sounds so nice, why is it so horrible? I've got so much time for this book. I just think, like, outside of the first few lines, what happens is, just in case like people haven't read this or don't know, I can't remember the first few pages, yeah, you instantly have Big Brother is watching you at two pages in. And I vividly remember he's got varicose veins and there's an ulcer on it. And I'm pretty sure it's just him going into his house, or into his little flat, and like him feeling uncomfortable going up the stairs and him having to go around his daily routine and trying to not let the thought police get to him. So I think it's such a good opening because it feels so closed and so intimate.
Yeah.
And I think the whole book is about fear and our favourite thing, entrapment.
Yes.
So it does that so well. And like, he instantly becomes that underdog trying to fight against this big society and Big Brother because he's limping with his varicose veins. I remember the first time I read this was in year 8, and I was like, what is a varicose vein? I was like, oh, I don't want to get old, but I don't actually think he's old.
No, I don't think he is.
I don't think he's so. Middle-aged. No, but it's like, it does what Dune by Frank Herbert does so badly, so well. Like, it's really quickly has footnotes sometimes explaining certain things, like certain terminology. So like, for instance, it says there's a footnote explaining what newspeak is, and like establishing the world, and it just has a simple sentence saying newspeak was the official language of Oceania, which is just so much better than Frank Herbert having this whole like go to a glossary to work out what this world is. I don't want that.
The same with Clockwork Orange. Literally other word is some made up word that you have to refer to the little like translated dictionary at the back of the book.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Big fans. And already it says so many times the slogans war is peace, freedom is slavery, ignorance is strength. And I think the first chapter ends with him, I think he might have to do his mandatory workout when they have the TVs in the apartments, and then they're like, yeah, you need to bend lower, and it's holding being singled out, and then you instantly have, I hate the word thrust, but you know what I mean, you're thrust into this world where everything you do suddenly becomes so much more like everything's like narrower, more closed in and stilted. So I just really love it, because not loads happens, but it's the most claustrophobic opening ever.
Yeah, it really is.
So you're like, oh my god, what is going to go on in this? That was probably the least literary analysis of 1984 ever.
No, it was very good though.
But I just basically want to rave about what a cool opening I think it is. Yeah. Mainly, in summary, just because it that first line... And it just really sticks with me.
Yeah, definitely. So I think that's exactly what you want from an opening. You want to be completely drawn in, bought into the world, no matter how kind of different it is.
Yeah.
And that book does it so well.
I don't know about you, but I find so often, it takes me so long to get into a book. It's so rare that from the first couple of pages I know I'm like, oh, I'm gonna love this, it's gonna be 5-star.
Yeah,
but I did in the first couple of pages, I was like, 5-star. Well, actually not the first time round, because I was too young, but when when I read it properly again when I was maybe first year of uni, then I was like, I've been missing out.
Love it.
That's really cool.
Yeah, very good.
Okay, what about you? Sorry, now you can ramble for ages. What did you pick for your opening book?
Well, I guess in some of the similar ways that it kind of throws you right into this different world and builds the anticipation for what's going to happen. Go for it, Till. I picked the beginning of the Night Circus, which, top notch. I guess you would call it fantasy realism. There's fantasy realism, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. I guess.
Yeah.
There's not too much magic stuff, but whatever. I just absolutely love the beginning, because it's got not like a preface, but it's called, they literally name it Anticipation. And the first line is, the circus arrives without warning.
Yeah.
Which I just love, and it just throws you into this description. It's not actually that detailed, but then it is kind of detailed as well, this such elaborate, beautiful descriptions of what the circus is like and how it looks. Yeah, it's basically all just description of how it looks for like 3 or 4 pages before it then brings you into the beginning. I don't know, I just absolutely love it, because I think I was just instantly thrown into like imagining this circus. And I think there's so many points of this book where the language is so descriptive, I could just see it all in my head the entire time.
Definitely.
Maybe I'll read a little bit as well.
Yeah, please do. Yeah. Describe the circus to us.
Yeah. The circus arrives without warning. No announcements precede it, no paper notices on downtown posts and billboards, no mentions or advertisements, oh, that sounded very American, in local newspapers. It is simply there when yesterday it was not. The towering tents are striped in white and black, no golds or crimsons to be seen, no colour at all, save for the neighbouring trees and the grass of the surrounding fields. Black and white stripes on grey sky, countless tents of varying shapes and sizes, with an elaborate wrought iron fence encasing them in a colourless world.
I love that, encasing them in a colourless world.
It's just so, so beautiful. I just love it. And it does add, because this kind of the lack of, this is also very bog standard, not great literary analysis from me as well.
We're just fangirling.
That's what you're going to get from us today. But just the fact that it's kind of slightly otherworldly because there's this absence of colour and it just being all kind of black and white, and you know that there's something up going on, and it just, I don't know, I just love it. From the first time I read this book, when I was 16-ish maybe, I just loved it. And I guess it does a similar thing, 1984, just throwing you right in there, and I think that's what the best kind of book openings do. They've got to grip you in with something slightly odd, slightly different. That's a common theme in these two, but also with such wonderful writing that you kind of can't tear your eyes away from it. You're just staring at it and just so intrigued to see what happens.
Yeah, and I was just thinking, sorry, I'm so bad. I rambled about my whole thing, and now.
No, talk, please.
But I was thinking, I love how meta it is in that the circus literally, it does come about warning. Well, I know it kind of doesn't because you're reading a book about circus, but like, boom, on the first page, it's there. There's no lead up to it.
Exactly.
That was a really cool first line. I mean, I actually remembered that line. If you asked me, I wouldn't have told you. But as soon as you said it, I was like, yes, I know this.
And the way it just goes from anticipation and then the circus arrives without warning. So it's not even like you're given time.
There's no anticipation.
To anticipate anything. There is no anticipation.
Yeah.
Because you're told there is, but then you're just straight into it and it's describing every single thing about the circus.
Mm-hmm.
So it is like it has just popped up out of nowhere and hasn't given you any time to process.
Yeah. And I think it works really well as well, because I can't remember how many pages you said that, but was it only like 4 pages or something?
Yeah, it's only like 3 or 4 pages.
Because I was just thinking, like, throughout, it does actually have super short chapters.
Yeah.
But that works really well at the start anyway, to have such a short bit, like, because you're suddenly like, oh my God, circus. And it's like, boom, over, next. And you're like, wait. Exactly. You're constantly going to and through. It's really mimicking, like, how lively and fast-paced the circus is. Even in the chapters, like from the get-go, and you're moving from page to page, from act to act, you know?
And even the last bit of that first section, it's the last two lines are, now the circus is open, now you may enter, and then it throws you straight into part one, gives you a couple of quotes, and then you're in the book. So even then, it's forcing you along in such a way as if you were part of it, and I guess I just love it. It's been a while since I've reread this, and I might end up rereading it this autumn because I feel like it's a very autumnal book. I know you read it in the middle of summer.
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
But I think I might have to reread this autumn. So,
yeah. You'll
probably hear me talking about it again.
Yeah.
I was off to shut up.
No, I love it because I think with a book about a circus, there's so many opportunities, actually really cool stuff, and I love that in this they really take the whole meta thing and run with it, like how she becomes, well, the narrator is a ringmaster of sorts and doing the whole roll up thing at the very start, and then also it's quite, there's a lot of contrast between the different bits right at the start, the different sections, because one bit that really sticks in my mind, which is definitely at the start, is when, I don't remember the names, but you know when they meet and there's the whole like magic umbrella.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? When they're walking through the streets.
When it, yes, the umbrella, but yeah, and they're in like the little cafe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's raining, yeah.
And then like they're outside the circus, it just moves. I can't remember the word. Like, do you remember you had to do it in English language GCSE? And it was like inductive and like deductive, like, or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think
it's like was... it's just so much like zooming in and out. I just feel like there's so much movement in it. There which is great for more... you know, traveling circus. So yeah, that's why I think it has a really good opening.
Yeah. And even though this is just about the circus being in this one place, like you say, there is that movement, and within all the different characters and the different groupings of characters and all the different parts of the city and whatever they're from, it's it does, it jumps you around a lot.
It does. Yeah.
Always fun.
It's so fun.
So yeah. Should we move on to our film beginnings?
Yeah, go on. Why not? Okay. Did you want to start? Because I did the last, or do you just want to do?
Okay, no, I'm happy to.
I don't mind.
Right. I'm gonna bleep it out because otherwise I'll make the podcast explicit. We can't.
Oh my god! What is this? What have you chosen?
I'm going for the beginning of Inglourious Basterds by Quentin Tarantino.
Oh my god, so interesting. Okay.
I don't know if you've seen this film.
I haven't. So you need to tell me everything. I want to have a plot summary as well.
Okay. Well, essentially it's about, it's set in World War II with and it follows both the Nazis and the not Nazis, both sides of the war, essentially. I don't really know what else I can say about it without really giving much away, but basically it's set in World War II, but it's not a war film as such, and it's about this group of Americans who call themselves the Inglourious Basterds. And it's about
wash
them
your mouth out.
Yeah, I am gonna wash my mouth out. I'm gonna have to find a little bleep noise to put in there. And it's about them and them trying to hunt the Nazis and stop the Nazis from doing whatever. But the opening scene is, it makes me feel all funny. It makes me all like goosebumpy and gross. Not gross, gross is the wrong word. But it just sets up this main bad guy as being such a kind of manipulative, horrible person, and it's who plays him? I can't remember what his name is, the actor, but essentially the scene is in the French countryside in a house, and this Nazi soldier goes in and starts having a conversation with this French farmer, asking him whether he's hiding any Jews in his house or whatever. And it's just this extended scene of them just sat at a kitchen table having a conversation, and it's just, I don't know, I can't really explain it. It just sets him up as such a horrible character, and it sets the kind of level of the danger for all the characters, and the fact that you don't know what's going to happen, they don't know what's going to happen, and it's just, I don't know, it's just so good. And I just love Tarantino's films. I think he's got, I don't know, such a good way with dialogue and storytelling. And I think this is just a great opening scene.
So,
totally just rambling there. I know it's very different from anything we've spoken about on the podcast. It is.
Well, I want to know, I can't really comment too much on the beginning because I haven't seen it. The first I'm hearing of it. Well, obviously I know the film, I know it's Brad Pitt, but the first I'm hearing about it is from you. But my contribution is purely that I googled the cast, but I don't know the name of the evil guy. So is it the guy that plays Joseph Goebbels? Is that how you even say his name? Because I remember doing him for GCSE and he was evil.
I think it might be him.
Or is it Hans Lander, whoever plays him?
Yes, it's Hans Lander, it's Christoph Waltz.
Okay.
And I was quite shocked when I found out, shocked is maybe a too strong word, that this was one of his very early films.
Is it?
His acting is just phenomenal.
Oh.
It's so good. But yeah, it's Christopher Waltz, and I can't remember who plays the French guy, but you don't really see him.
Oh.
Not in much of the rest of it, but oh, I don't know, it's just really good. I really enjoy it.
Mm.
I don't know if everyone would.
Mm.
I think Tarantino is quite I think you either like him or you don't with his films. But I think storytelling is so good. The way he just from scene to scene, you're just so captivated by whatever the scene is, even when they're just at the kitchen table or when they're sat in a pub playing cards or something, and there's always this level of threat, and you're always worried about what's going to happen or like how this situation is going to turn out, because you just don't
know
someone or something's going to happen that just makes everything flip and switch.
Is it quite an intense film?
I'm trying to think. I'm not sure if you'd like it or not. It's one of those I just don't know. I think.
Yeah.
And it's one of his. It's Quentin Tarantino, and it's not for the faint of heart, because I guess you typically know that Tarantino just goes for bloodshed, gore, not gore, but brutality.
Yeah.
And it is one of his more intense films of the lot.
I'm just trying to think of other films of his, how they begin, like how they would compare.
Because I can't remember how Kill Bill begins.
Mm.
He very much just throws you into the middle of a scene somewhere, it feels like.
Yeah.
You're just kind of straight in it. There's no kind of like gentle. A lot of the time there isn't really much of a gentle kind of warm up into it. It's just like, oh, this is where we're at, this is what's happening.
He's definitely like a, not just a graphic filmmaker, but quite like a bold one. If you think of Wes Anderson as having all the pastels, I feel like Tarantino has all of the bolds.
Definitely. I think if you were to look at a colour palette, or just think of a colour palette just from the posters of the films, it's very much black, white, red, maybe a little bit yellow. I'm not sure which Tarantino film I would recommend to someone who hasn't seen any Tarantino yet. I think I need to come up with an answer to that question, because I do think for people who like films and like storytelling, I think Tarantino is a great storyteller. The way he does it, I think, is fab. So I would recommend people watching Tarantino if they haven't, potentially. I'm going to let you tell us about your film opening now.
Okay, thanks.
Hold on.
Lol. I feel bad because I literally couldn't contribute to that at all, but maybe that's a good thing to just let you discuss. Okay, for my film beginning, it was a tough call, but I settled on West Side Story.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't know, I was trying to think, have we spoken about it? And I was like,
not in depth, no.
No, I don't think we have an episode on it. Because Another Day of Sun, like, and Star La La Land, best movie opening, period. Yes, yeah. But, you know, we've got our La La Land, we have our La La Land episode. It's so hard to say fast. So, West Side Story is, oh, what an opening. So, they open with, well, the opening song is Jet Song, but they don't sing for ages. And it's just, I don't even know what you call it, but it's just the instrumental. But it's like the build up of the different sounds. It's kind of like It's really similar to the opening of In the Heights, actually.
I was just thinking that. I was,
you know,
like,
I mean, like, you hear, like, a tap. Definitely got
inspiration from West Side Story.
Yeah, like, you hear, like, a tap drip, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or, like, the wind going across. Or you hear all the sounds of the city. Again, very like Manhattan, which is my favourite film opening, aside from these two. But it is really cool, because I just love... Oh my god, no, I just thought of another favourite film opening.
Go.
No, I was just thinking of Midnight in Paris.
Oh, yeah.
For the exact same reason as Manhattan. Well, basically, what it is, my favourite kind of film openings are when you get, like, the snapshots of the, like, the place you're about to enter. Like, with Manhattan, it's just short clips of all over the city. A very fun monologue. And then in Midnight in Paris, it's the same. It's just, it goes through Paris in a day, all the landmarks, and just has stills of them. Yeah. And it's so pretty. I just think it's the most gorgeous start to a film you could ask for. And this is the exact same thing in West Side Story. I love it. Like, you just see, they've got, like, a bird's eye view of this junkyard. I don't know, like a ship.
Yeah.
I don't know what you call it. It's some kind of, like, building site.
Yeah.
And then it zooms in on just one sign, like a do not enter sign. And it does that around the city. I think that's so cool, because as much as I love being thrown right into the action, like, because it's quite a contrast to Tarantino, on the other hand, I also really love that anticipation of the night circus and just being able to get a feel for, like, the place you're about to inhabit, you know? And especially in a musical, when you start having all of the diegetic sounds and mixing them with the non-diegetic, like, that is so cool. Like, the city becoming part of the song, what? Oh my god, it's, I can't tell you,
part of the city,
literally, that's what I love. I'm so hyped right now.
So good. It's so
also
good.
I should mention, I'm talking about the latest West Side Story, because I can't remember quite how they open. Obviously, it's not that dissimilar with the opening. Like, they definitely have Jet Song as, like, the first one, right? In both.
I think they have maybe a bit more of that kind of lead up into the one, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Like, it's more, it feels more cinematic or, like, panoramic.
Yeah, because I think if I remember correctly, the original one, it starts with just the music and that red and black picture of
like
the skyline.
Yeah.
And it's just that for a while, and then the picture slowly kind of builds and things are added to it before and with the music, and then you're, like, in the city.
That makes sense.
And they start the song.
Yeah,
because so it builds you up with that music, but not showing snapshots in the same way.
Yeah, I suppose they used to do that in the day, back in the day, a lot of musicals, didn't they? Musical films. I'm thinking of Funny Girl. They did that when they had the actual interval on the screen.
Yeah. It was quite cool. They did that in West Side Story, I'm sure, as
well. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I loved that. When they're in this, especially because with Jet Song, and with the whole premise of West Side Story is the two sides and them gearing up for some kind of fight, battle thing. And so it's, like, surveying the scene, getting ready for battle. Mm. And then when they launch into Jet Song, it's like some kind of battle cry, you know?
Yeah.
It's such a good start. I love Jet Song. When you're a jet. Oh!
So good.
Yeah. And they start doing it's the clicking for me. That is so iconic, so memorable.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I just don't even have the words for how good Jet Song is. I'll get so excited.
You know I'm going to listen to it straight after this.
I have to. Honestly, you have to. And because also it guides you through the city, like, they're part of the city.
Yeah.
Mike Fice did an amazing job as, what's he called? Riff? Did I make that up?
No, riff. Yeah.
Is he called? Yeah. And like they're all like it's kind of eerie. Like they're whistling together.
Yeah.
When they're going through the street, but they also do super cool dancing at the same time. So I don't know. It's kind of scary and very like. Emphasizes the gangs more, like doesn't feel as musically. It's like, oh my god, scary.
Yeah, definitely.
And it's such a good ensemble opening kind of thing, like that, like the powerful musical opening. Let's go.
Yeah, and I think that's what a musical opening thrives on, that kind of big ensemble moment.
Yeah,
so good. That's a really good choice from you.
Thank you. Did you have any other honourable opening mentions you wanted to discuss?
Drive. It's like a 10-minute long car chase with like three words in it, which is just... It's definitely a film where if you don't like the opening scene, you won't like the film.
Okay.
So it's a good kind of like litmus test opening scene, but also it just sets up everything. It shows you exactly... Mm. What he's like, and just love it. The opening of The Hobbit, I love. I think every time I hear that music when it starts, the little Shire tune, just something about it just fills me with warmth. I just love it. And then you get these cute little bits of the Shire. Just love it. Just makes me happy. And a fun one, I thought the beginning of Mamma Mia 2
was
great fun.
Oh my god, yeah. Yeah.
But
that is fun.
That's just
everybody scream. I love it.
Do you have any more honourable mentions?
The only other one I wanted to say was for book and film, mm-hmm. Call Me By Your Name.
Yes.
Have we done a Call Me By Your Name episode? I don't know.
I don't think we have.
I don't know. I just keep chatting about it regardless. Oh my god, you know how obsessed I am in the film with not even like the actual scene, but just the opening credits.
Yeah.
Oh my god, the music's so dramatic. It's like, da-da-da-da-da-da.
So good.
And seeing, and because I love the typography, like just the like kind of yellow chalk look. And I love that they've got all the statue pictures and it's like, da-da, and it changes in it. Oh my god, even just the credits is so good. And then in the book, oh my god, I can't remember what the first line is, but I'm pretty sure it opens with Oliver saying later. And then he makes that comment that he says, I think it comes later in the film version in the book, and he's like, oh, that's how he'd say goodbye to us when the time comes. Like, the ride's so beautiful, and it like straight away hits you with Oliver arriving, and you're just so ready for them to fall in love. I can't. Sorry, that was a bit excessive, and that was my honorable mention.
Yeah. Also, book honorable mention to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh,
I love how kind of just point blank but weird it is. It's like, oh yeah, this is guy with Arthur Dent who lives here and his house is going to be demolished for an intergalactic his house is going to be demolished, but then turns out at the same time the Earth is going to be demolished for an intergalactic highway. And it's just so weird, and just Ford Prefect just kind of pops in there to like save Arthur. I just think it's so good, so strange, but also written in such kind of point blank way that I think is great fun.
Oh, that does sound fun.
Yeah. Shall we have a little game time?
Oh my god, shall we? Oh my god, let's go.
Okay, we're going to play a little quick fire round of Would You Rather Book Edition.
Yeah.
So, Kerry, would you rather only be allowed to read new books or only be allowed to read classics? New releases or classics? What would you pick?
New releases.
I think I would do the same.
Because, well, it depends on your definition of classics, but that could probably shut off a considerable amount of books, but at least with new releases, then surely there's just be a constant supply of loads of really exciting new ones.
Exactly. And surely you'd have like new updated versions of old classic books.
Yeah. As like well retellings.
Amongst that, so.
Yeah. So true. Yeah. Sorry, I can't even ask you the question.
No, it's fine. This is quick fire anyway.
Okay.
Would you rather never be able to finish a series or never reread your favorite book?
I don't know. You say first. Tricky.
I don't know, because I love knowing the ending of things, but then I don't read that many series. So I think I'd potentially be okay to never be able to finish a series, because I love going back and rereading books, even though I know there are way too many books. I don't have enough time to reread books, but I think I do end up rereading at least one or two books every year.
Yeah,
I think there's just something about them, but I can't remember the last time I read an entire series since I was a teenager, so I think I'm not really that much into series books in the same way. I think I'd be able to live without finishing a series. What do you think?
I think it would really annoy me if I couldn't finish a series, but I agree with you, because not that I reread books often. If I could never read I'll Give You the Sun Again, I'd be so sad, because that's so pretty. How can I never read that again?
Yeah. I know what you mean. Would you rather live in your favourite book, but the main character hates you, or your favourite book character is real and they're actually super annoying?
Oh. Surely be able to live in the world and them hate you, because if they're really annoying, you're going to hate them anyway, and you're not even getting anything good out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? Like, no, at least say you were in Gatsby hated you. Would you know what? Bye, don't care, because I'm just going to go off with Nick anyway and have a party at yours. So, like, go on, have fun hating me.
Exactly. And I think I agree. And I think there'd be less of a kind of difference if your favourite character just happened to be real but was annoying. I think it kind of has the same vibe as when people talk about when they meet their, like, idol celebrities and they're actually not very nice people. And it's like, well, you can live with that. Surely it'd be more exciting to live in the world of your favourite book. But
yeah.
Because what happens if the main character in your favourite book is actually someone you already don't like, so it's okay if they hate you.
Yeah, maybe you like them because they hate everyone.
Yeah, so. And last one. Would you rather not be able to buy any new books until you finished all the ones on your shelf, or never be allowed to read any of the books you currently own?
Wait, I'm thinking about what's on my shelf right now, how bothered I am.
Thing is though, your shelf, your collection is smaller because you're very good at getting rid of them.
Yeah, but to be fair, I've been getting rid of ones that I haven't read because I just know, I was like, I'm not gonna read them.
Yeah. So yeah, would you keep reading the ones you've got or get rid of them all for new ones?
I think I'd say, like, get rid of, like, not read the ones I own. Wait, does that include, like, my favourite ones I've already read?
Yeah, it says, or never be allowed to read any books you currently own. That's the thing, because
you have
to read your favourite ones.
Oh, no, I want to reread Soulmates.
Yeah.
No, I'd have to never read another book again. Like, I want never need one.
I know, I'd have to only read the ones I've got. We've both got books that we haven't read on our shelves, so we'd be okay.
Yeah, and I've been slow. Like, I still haven't read so many of them, so I guess it'll keep me going for a while.
Exactly, same.
Yeah.
So yeah, there we go. That was that. Let us know your answers.
Yeah,
comment on the Instagram.
Yeah, is it time to move on to the endings?
I believe it is time to move on to the endings.
Oh my god.
Would you like to give us your book ending?
Yeah, hang on. Ah! Okay. I opted for Darling by India Knight. So obviously endings. This is heavy spoiler territory. And I would like to read the ending.
Oh, you're gonna emotionally destroy me again.
Because I was like, what is this? Let me see. Okay. Hang on. Oh my god, okay. I'm just gonna read this, like the actual final page.
Okay.
Like, I can't believe this was literally it. Okay. Linda went into labour 5 weeks early. Fabrice, his phone turned off, was in a meeting with an architect on the outskirts of town. By the time he saw his missed calls and raced towards the Hôpital Franco-Britannique in the architect's borrowed car, Linda was dying from a postpartum hemorrhage. Fabrice, unaware, turned much too fast onto the Rue de Villiers. He crashed into a plane tree and was killed instantly. What? Oh, and then it, like, there's another paragraph about the funeral and the baby girl.
Mm.
And that, yeah, that, how is that the final page? For context, the book is, it follows Linda from the cousin's perspective.
Mm.
And she's finally found happiness with Fabrice, and she's not been happy with any of the other guys, and just about to have their baby, and they both die on the final page.
How did they die? Even together?
No.
And then she just ends the book. It's just done. It's just finished.
That is literally it. I was waiting for more, and I was like, "What? That how can you just what? No." However, I picked this as my favorite book ending. Because I don't know, because I hate myself. No, I'm joking. I think just because I've never been so shook by an ending in my life.
Yeah.
And do you know what, it does make sense for the book, because it's not a happy clappy book. I mean, it's not necessarily somber, but I think if she's idolizing her cousin in a weird way, I don't know, does she, I guess to an extent.
Yeah.
Then somehow it's gonna come crashing down, and the book's about how she's been unlucky. So why is her luck suddenly gonna change? And she seems like a kind of chaotic presence.
Mm.
Not judging, just saying.
Yeah. No, I think she is.
But I just love being surprised. And normally that kind of ending would really annoy me, because it'd be like, you didn't even build up to that. Like, I hate it. You know when an ending gives and it was all just a dream?
Yeah. But
unless it's Wizard of Oz, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
But that.
It's such a punch, that ending.
I was sobbing. That was just so extreme. But
it's the sort of thing that it makes you, you read it and then it's over and you just close the book and then you just end up just sitting there for a while being like,
yeah,
what was that? And just trying to digest it.
Yeah. Oh my god. I'm pretty sure because the page before it was super cute.
It was.
I'm trying to find, I folded it over, which I always do on my favorite pages. I'm trying to find which bit I loved. I think the whole exchange was just really cute between the two. So I think it was the contrast between them that made me be like, and because they could have left it at that conversation with her about to have the baby. I mean, it's the fact that they could have left it there. And it would have ended fine, and I still would have rated it highly.
Mm.
But the fact that they then went and did that.
Brutal. Absolutely. I think
this,
brutal.
Yeah, and basically, I'm just talking about the shock value for this. It's just like, are you actually joking?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I have to say about it, really. I'm just absolutely shook. And now you guys can't really read it and be shook if you haven't already. So that's a bit sad. Hello. What did you pick?
I picked a book which I love going on about, the Scarlet Pimpernel.
Yeah.
I know I've spoken a little bit about the Scarlet Pimpernel before. I don't know whether I've spoken about the ending before.
I don't think so, not the ending.
It's a very different ending in style-wise to your ending that you've just spoken about. Because it's not like the final paragraph is so beautifully written. I mean, it is written wonderfully, but it's not to the extent that it's like, oh my god, that's the best final paragraph ever. I'm shocked by it. It's just the way that she manages to pull everything together in so few words at the end. Like, literally about a chapter and a bit from the end, which is only maybe like 10 to 15 pages. Before then, everything is just in total shambles, because the premise of the book is during the French Revolution, there's this guy called the Scarlet Pimpernel, and he's helping to smuggle people out of Paris into England to stop them being killed by the guillotine.
Mm.
All these people are like, oh, we've got to find, all these French people are like, oh, we've got to find who this guy is and stop him, because he's trying to save all these people. Whatever, that's the premise. And you're constantly trying to figure out who the Scarlet Pimpernel is, and they're like chasing him and whatever. And it's just all over the shop. And you're like, there's not much left of this book, and everything is still so up in the air, and you still don't know who it is, and you still don't know if they're going to be able to do it. And just the way that she manages to just tie it all together in a really satisfying manner that doesn't leave plot holes or questions. I just think it's so good.
Mm.
I absolutely love it. Like, you feel satisfied, but not in an unsatisfied way. It's like, it all makes sense. And then you're able to kind of then piece together bits from earlier in the book and see how it all kind of makes sense and works.
Yeah.
I just really like it.
Do you want to read out a tiny bit?
Yeah, let me. Oh, it's hard to even pick a bit, because it just ends. Because it just kind of ends, really, saying that.
Well, that's nice, not dragging it on.
Speaking of matter of fact, in the way that it ends, and like the final part is, it is also a fact that M. Chauvelin, I can't speak French, whoever, the accredited agent of the French Republican government, was not present at that or any other social function in London after that memorable evening at Lord Grenville's ball. And then that's it.
Ooh.
And then it's over. So basically, he was the guy who was trying to help find the Scarlet Pimpernel.
Oh, I like that it's so matter of fact, though.
Yeah, because it's just this whole end page is just them being like, oh yeah, they went on their boat back to England, and everyone was just in awe of them, and
yeah,
this annoying French guy has kind of been extradited from the government or whatever, and everyone's still talking about this fantastic ball that happened that sort of acts as a cover-up for a lot of the stuff that was going on.
Yeah.
And I guess it's a kind of historical fiction that makes you think whether these sorts of things, because there is ideas that a form of Scarlet Pimpernel or that sort of people like that were real, but it's like all that kind of like hidden underbelly, but like a nice hidden underbelly of the upper class people.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they're not all horrible. There's actually these people trying to do nice things or whatever. Mm. And it's just very matter of fact and blunt, but all nice and contained.
Yeah. Because there's nothing worse. And do you know what bugs me about ending? So often when it ends with like they're just about to get together, when they like finally admit they like each other.
Yeah.
But this is the opposite of that. Perfect. Like, you just know where you stand. Got to the end. Here you go.
Exactly. You know where everyone stands.
Yeah.
That everyone's kind of got there. They just did it.
Especially for that genre, when it is historical fiction, that's what you want, because it's not some kind of like litfic thing. Like, fair enough with litfic, you just with Litvic, I feel like they just pick up random where it starts and ends. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, you could have started that at any other point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it ends, I was like, what, why did it end though?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's quite annoying.
Thank
you. I've just been brought a cup of tea.
No, I've just finished mine. No.
Need to get Heather on it to bring you another one.
Yeah, please. No.
No, there is something very satisfying about a satisfying ending.
Yeah. Because I think so many endings that I've read recently are open-ended.
Yeah.
And you know, I just need the closure, hon. I need it. I've been with you for too long.
Yeah. We need to need to wrap it up and then with a nice little bow.
Please.
Even if that bow makes you cry, like in Darling.
Oh my god, yeah. Because I it's
still a bow.
It really bugs me the end. Unless it's a Christopher Nolan thing. It really bugs me at the end of books and films when I'm like, I don't understand it. Like, I still feel like they haven't answered something.
What, like the end of Inception?
Yeah, or like the end of... Well, this was me at the end of the third Richard Osman book. And then they did explain it in the fourth book. It wasn't like a big secret or anything, so they should have just explained it in the third one. It annoys me when I'm still trying to piece it together afterwards. They shouldn't be that hard. I read something else recently that was like that, and it was so annoying that I've blocked it from my mind.
Well, that's how I feel about, I guess, segueing into films like Christopher Nolan. That's how I feel about Asteroid City, but just the entire film.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the hell are you trying to say? It's like, it's got such a cyclical ending.
Oh my God.
The ending is shot in the complete reverse of the beginning. And I'm like, okay, so we've got a nice, tidy, cyclical ending. Mm. But what the hell were you trying to tell us?
Literally. that is actually, I'm so glad you brought that up because that's reminded me. I wanted to say, I love the opening of Darjeeling Limited. And that was up there for me. But I feel like I was speaking about Wes quite a bit. So I left it. But it's really cool. And I keep banging on about the movie because I want people to watch it and love it. And also French Dispatch. That opening is so good because it's the same as Midnight in Paris. When, like, he's just going around the city. It's just Owen Wilson on a bike showing you the sights. I love it. I love it. So thanks for reminding me. Wes Anderson's pretty cool openings. But what happened? What was going on in Asteroid City? Thank you. Goodbye.
If anyone knows and wants to chat with us, I'd love it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because I want there to be something he was trying to say, but I just can't tell what it was.
I don't, because as we said before, I don't like it when there's that whole thing nowadays when it's like super postmodern. It's like postmodern.
Yes,
and
it is.
And they're like, you don't need. There's no point to it. Like, it just is. Oh no! I just want a story. I just want to be entertained. Like, just tell me, like, what is the vibe?
I know that, and I feel like I've felt that postmodernism modern that you just isn't a real term, but we're gonna go for it. That they're like, oh, this is just storytelling, this is just a story, but oh, there's this meaning, but oh, the meaning is actually there's no meaning. And it's like, come on.
I mean, I find it fun when there's hidden meanings in things. But at the end of the day, and I love analysing stuff. We do. We're, you know, always an English student. But just give me a story. Yeah. Why do I have to work for everything?
Yeah. Right, come on.
No.
Well, whatever. We'll stop complaining now and tell you what our actual favourite film endings are.
Yeah, let's go.
Let's go, let's go.
Okay. Whose turn is it?
I think it's mine.
Are you doing it?
Yeah, I'll do it. Okay, this is a semi-open-ended ending that you can view in both a happy way and a sad way, or both simultaneously. Actually, there's quite a lot of film endings that I like that end like that. Don't know what that says about
me. Oh, well, we could honourable mention them now as well.
Honourable mention. La La Land, obviously.
Oh, yes, I was going to say, that's my favourite. It used to not be, but that is my favourite ending.
I love it. Sobbing every single time. And also the actual film I wanted to mention, I also do sob every time at the end of it. And I know we had an entire episode on it, but I just love it so much. So it's Her. It's the ending of Her when they're sat on the roof. Amy Adams and Joaquin Phoenix. Sorry, should I say Amy and Theodore? And I mean, if you've listened to the podcast, you know I love this film so much. So I won't bang on about it. But I just love that ending so much because you're simultaneously so sad because you're like, oh, they both had these beautiful relationships which are now done, and they kind of feel alone and empty and whatever. But then there's also that hope and happiness. It's like, well, they've got each other, whether that's in the platonic or a romantic way, they've got each other, and there's that hope and that kind of openness to love in the future and just appreciating everything. And I just love it when you've just got that shot of the back of their heads from the roof and the sky. It's just,
oh yeah,
I just love it.
No, that was a really good choice. It's because it's that thing that I was saying earlier about it's so annoying when they end it when they get together, but it's more like them having that realization of that it's okay for them to be together. Yeah. And just sitting and vibing, you know, it's just really nice and like peaceful. And because it's not a dramatic movie, it's more like a thoughtful one.
Yeah. And I think that ending just tops it up so nicely that you know that they've learned, they've grown and learned and developed, and you kind of feel like you have as well. And it's just, oh, I love it. Makes me emotional.
No, yeah.
What's your film ending that you chose?
Obviously, I had to choose like a super dramatic, romantic gesture ending. I opted for My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yes!
Because
so good.
I probably have spoken about this before on here. Who cares? Back at it again. Won't shut up about it.
No.
Ooh, okay, so in the movie, Julia Roberts, I think she's still called Jules, I don't know.
Yeah,
she
yeah.
goes to meet her safety husband / best friend. She goes to visit him. Turns out, surprise, he's engaged and he's getting married to Cameron Diaz. And she's like, oh my God, I actually really fancy you. Tries to break up the wedding. Her best friend George, he comes out to assist her. Love him. Rupert Everett pop off, and then it all kicks off. And at the end of the movie, she's at the wedding by herself. She sat at the reception, and she said that they can have her song to dance to. And I was like, oh, and it does to the way you look tonight, and it's super cute. And you're kind of like, it's kind of sad ending because you're like, oh, she didn't get the guy, but also it's good she didn't break up a potential marriage. But then just as she sat there looking stunning in her lavender dress, she gets a phone call from George, who's back home supposedly, and he starts talking to her and he's like, I'm proud of you, you did the right thing. Also, they have this huge chunky 90s phones, which is absolute joke. I love it. And he says, like, whatever. And he's like, I just picture you there, sat at the table, drumming your fingers. And she's kind of like, oh, what? And then he goes, you know, in your lavender gown. She's like, George, I didn't. I can't do the voice. So I didn't tell you my gown was lavender. And then she's so, and then he basically is describing what she's doing. He's like, oh, and then she's off her chair in one swift movement, wondering, searching, is it, could it be? Sorry, I don't know why I'm not summarizing it very well. I just love
it. No, you're just doing it play by play, but I love it.
Yeah, and then he's like, suddenly the crowd part and she sees him. And then, so obviously George is there. And then he goes, and he moves towards you with the moves of a jungle cat. It sounds cringe, but from George, he's just really funny. Yeah. And he's so cute. And he says something like, them might not be love, there might not be sex. He's like, but my God, they'll be dancing. And then they start dancing together. And you're like, you know what? It's not that sad because they're just the best friends ever, and they're having a ball, having a dance, and then I Say a Little Prayer comes on again, and they're dancing to that, looking beautiful, having a wonderful time, and it's just so cute. Like, imagine your best friend like flying over to you and then just surprising you and having a dance with you to I Say a Little Prayer.
It's just so, so sweet.
And, yeah, and it's actually super interesting ending in that at that time, all of these big rom-coms, like Notting Hill, for instance, end with, like, the guy gets the girl.
Yeah.
And then it's not. This one's a bit more like she's living her best life without getting the guy. And this is such a joyful ending, which is I think is such a good film.
Yeah, it's love it. So good.
It has all the cheesy bits you want without the cheesy ending.
Yeah. Yeah, which I think, like you say, is kind of unheard of for a lot of the other films made in that time. And even a lot of the time now as well.
Yeah.
You don't see that. But no, I know, it just fills me with so much joy hearing that little play-by-play. Makes me want to watch it again.
Sorry, everyone, for going through the entire scene.
No, we love it. We love it.
Searching. Could it be? I really, really love it.
Oh, it really is.
Good ending to end on.
Yes. Have you got any honourable mention endings that we haven't mentioned?
I do enjoy the ending of Midnight in Paris as well. Mm. Because I like when you have the full circle moments, you know? And
I love a full circle moment.
Yeah, and because he says near the beginning of the film that he loves walking through Paris in the rain and his fiance doesn't. And then he meets this new girl and then they decide to walk through Paris in the rain at the end. And that's really cute. Obviously, La La Land would have been my top choice as well to mention.
Yep.
And I really like Darjeeling Limited because it mirrors the beginning.
Yeah, I love a good mirror.
Yeah, and there was one more I was thinking. Oh, and again, Call Me By Your Name. A lot of these that we're talking about have really strong beginnings and endings.
Call Me By Your Name, that's a good ending.
I have loved you for the first. I can't care. Oh my God.
Yeah,
that's beautiful. I mean, I kind of don't like it, but I do. Because it's so like, oh my God, I can't believe you're calling up to like say you're engaged. Go away, Oliver.
There's something about an emotion.
Also, it's such a beautiful shot of Timmy when suddenly it's winter and he's not with him anymore. And then it's just the camera's on him crying.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
Heartbreaking.
Anything else from you to add?
Love the ending of Les Mis again. Kind of emotionally traumatizing, but at the same time, I think that's a very strong, just in general, very strong musical ending. Mm. Book-wise, I'm surprised you didn't mention The Great Gatsby.
I know, seeing as I do have a tattoo of it.
But I do think that is a really beautiful ending.
Yeah, I was thinking about it.
And a very famous last line.
Yeah. I was thinking about it, but then I was like, I feel like I've spoken about it too much.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love he says, so he beat on votes against the current, born back ceaselessly into the past.
Yeah.
I don't have the whole thing, I just have the so he beat on.
Yeah.
But I do, I really love that. I love that ending.
And it summarizes the entire novel.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I was thinking, I forgot. I was in movie mode, but book mode. Yeah.
But yeah, there are some very strong books and films there.
Mm.
So hopefully we've either given you some recommendations or you've been able to join in our kind of fangirling.
Yeah. Yeah, that was such a fun way of approaching it.
Yeah, thanks, I really like that. And I want to start asking other people now what their favorite like beginnings and endings are.
Yeah, and I bet we're gonna think of so many more after this.
Yeah,
and I'm like, like for instance, like, if we'd left this podcast and you hadn't brought up Gatsby, I would have been listening back going, oh my God, no, it was my favorite. Yeah, so we're gonna,
or even just like the dramatic ending of Dorian Gray.
Oh my God, no, that, when I read that for the first time when I was like 16, 17, the drama of it, oh my god, when you just walk in on him and he's older, I was like, oh.
And you just see his rings and that's the only way he really was.
Oh. Yes. Yeah.
Love it, love it, love it.
Love. Also, one final thing. I was thinking about the ending of Harry Potter, but then I felt like that's really obvious.
No, but I think that's a really good one because that's a good example of a when a time jump works.
Yeah. Exactly. Because I hate when they sling in at the end, like 10 years in the future, and it's really cringe.
Yeah.
But it's so cute, like back. I love like the setting for it, that they're reuniting at the Hogwarts Express. That's really cute, like the start of a new journey. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, and one last thing. It's so cringe, I didn't say it earlier, but the ending of Twilight, the film.
Yeah.
Like Breaking Dawn Part 2 ending.
Yeah.
All I'm going to say is, I was sobbing in the cinema, and it still makes me emotional every time when they have, oh my god, no, like when they have it in black and white and they go through every single person and it's so cute, and then they have like they flick to the where it says Bella, Edward and Jacob like on a page for their bit. Oh yeah, I mean the less said about that the better, but it was really I really loved
that. That is very, very good. Oh.
Mm.
So good. So please let us know your favorite beginning and ending, because we'd love to know.
Yes,
and we're gonna end with a blonde moment.
Yeah, we are.
Blonde moment.
Doo doo. And this week's blonde moment, we've just had Wimbledon, so I thought it'd be a perfect time to give this week's blonde moment to, I'm hoping I'm gonna say her name right, Marketa von Strova. I think that's how you say the name. She won the ladies singles. She's a Czech player, only 24 years old, and she's one of the lowest seeded players. Well, she wasn't even seeded.
I swear she wasn't. Yeah, she wasn't.
She wasn't seeded. She was one of the lowest ranked players to win Wimbledon ever. Yeah. And she did play so well. We were following all the tennis over the past couple of weeks. And she was playing really, really well, obviously. And it was just amazing. Yeah. We love to see these new young players coming in and winning these titles. So kudos to her. So good. And I'm sure she'll be around for a while. Yeah. She's definitely there's lots of really strong female players coming up, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for sure.
Because we kind of lost the Venus sisters and the Venus sisters, the Williams sisters.
Oh my god, it's so bad that I just went, and I didn't even think about that.
Because I think they're kind of, they're not really in, but there's lots of really new young people kind of working their way up, so.
Yeah, keeping it exciting.
Keeping it exciting, so very, very good.
Yeah.
So, Kerry, what are we going to do next time?
It's Barbie time! Woo!
So excited, so excited.
Dancing that away, yeah! Oh my god, I can't wait. And you know what, when this episode's out, Barbie, we would have seen Barbie. Like, Oh my god, guys, how good was Barbie? I loved it.
Top notch. We love Ryan Gosling. My Ken all day, every day.
Oh my god, the only Ken.
So yeah, that should be really, really exciting. So we hope you've enjoyed this episode.
And
go watch Barbie so you can listen to us talk about Barbie next time.
I can't wait.
Woo!
Thanks for listening to 2 o'clock with Keller.
Join us next time for more.